You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Raj Parr. We'll talk to Raj about Phelan Farm, and maybe we'll get to his exhausting multitude of other projects, but I really want to talk to him about Phelan. We'll taste. Raj brought in, I guess it's a pet nat from Phelan. We're going to taste that towards the end of the show for the weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Raj Parr no longer needs an introduction. He is one of the most prolific wine people in the world. His legendary palate, his instinctive winemaking, and his commitment to regenerative farming have steered him to his passion, Phelan Farm in Cambria, California. Raj has traded his nomadic global lifestyle to resident farmer and makes soulful spiritual wines. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Raj.
Thank you.
Good I didn't to have back. To go list all the million things back to Michael Mina. We've done that, been there, you know? All right, so we're talking to Raj at VaynerMedia in New York City. Raj, thank you. Thank you to my friend Gary Vaynerchuk and Vayner for their hospitality. I told you this off air, Raj. This is our 250th episode.
Amazing.
So, you know, that's somewhat significant. It's not 237. It's not 256. It's 250, you know? So I said, listen, I got to do something special. So I figured you were coming in town for your portfolio tasting. So I timed it. So that's why we're sitting down. And it was by intent and with pleasure that I asked you to do this episode.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yep. And it's a pleasure to have you. So, and I've seen you a little in between, which was nice. But up until recently, between Phelan and COVID, you weren't traveling much. And I actually traveled out and saw you, and you really weren't traveling. You were talking about just leaving. So quickly tell me a couple things. What brings you to New York? And I just found out that you have some other travel plan.
Yep.
Just tell me quickly about the travel. Yeah, and you've been a few places too. We can go
backwards. No, it's you know, the first year, I guess, in 21, I didn't really go to many places. And 2022, a little travel. But, you know, when you are farming, the opportunities are, just a few. You can travel in the winter, maybe a little bit in the spring, but then the summer you can't really go anywhere until the harvest is over. So especially if you don't have any employees. I have one employee currently, and I will hire two more people this year so I can get more things done. And if I need to take a trip, I can take a trip, because without that, it's, you know, you're always in one place.
So you came to show your wines with your importer distributor.
Right. Yeah. I came for the Grand Cru tasting.
And you mentioned to me, I didn't know until you came in here, you're going to the Jura.
Yeah. Next. I usually go every March, because we have many Jura varieties planted at Phelan Farm. And a big tasting there in March, which I go for every year, and just to learn and see how they've done their pruning. They usually don't finish all of it by March, but I think, depends on the weather and sea. But, you know, things we learn from
How many different people are you going to see? Are you planting yourself with a couple, or you want to bop around?
Bop around. You know, of course, you know, when you go to someone like Stéphane Tissot or to Jean-François Ganva. It's not a short tasting. You're there for 5-6 hours. So, you know, you can't walk in there and say, oh, I got another appointment in an hour. You're committed for the whole day at
not
least.
Those guys, but yeah. That works for you anyway. Are you walking the vineyards with them too?
Yeah, because, you know, they have vineyards around for sure. Yeah, that's good. Because one of the key things I learned is you know, how they're pruning and you know, there's been some extreme weather conditions in what we've had in California and what they're having in France. So it's, you know, I want to hear what they think about it, because it's been, last year we had a really dry year and they had a wet year in 21. This year we had a really wet year. So, I mean, there's no comparison because...
You get insights to certain situations.
Yeah, for sure. It's something to learn and kind of take in consideration when you're working your own vines.
Here's an amateur question. When you're pruning and you're pruning varietals that are, you know, indigenous or popular in the Jura, and I know we'll talk about in a minute the varietals, you know, you've introduced to Phelan, is the pruning different varietal by varietal? Or pruning is pruning per se?
No, it is different when you prune. But even in Jura, they will do different things. People will either do Gio or they'll do Cordon. But yeah, when you're pruning Trousseau and Pulsar, for example, two very different red grapes, and you know, you short prune Pulsar and you kind of do a long pruning on Trousseau, because, you know, it depends on the vigor of the place. And yeah, so it's just, you know, I think I'll have to see at least 10 vineyards to kind of figure out as what different people do.
You have these varietals planted and you've vintage them already. Are you confident you're doing all the right stuff? I know you always want to learn, but I mean, you haven't screwed anything up, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's Pulsar is definitely the hardest grape.
Is it?
It's hard. Even the Jura, they kind of, you know, call it evil themselves. So they are kind of, and with the climate change, it's definitely, you know, really, it really is something you want to kind of, you know, keep with you. Had it for that long. They've had it there for that long, but it's getting harder and harder.
So everything that's thrown at them, early frosts, earlier or later, harvest, all that stuff needs adjustment, right?
Yeah, I think it's globally happening, and we all have to adjust.
Some regions worse.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I just want to kind of understand what they're doing, and kind of, because, you know, the things will, you know, the same problems will come to us, or the other way around.
Yeah. Before we talk about Phelan, and we didn't really, you know, like I said, you don't need an introduction, and I didn't want to get into stuff, but there's something I'm curious about, and I've known you, but I don't know the details. I'm curious about the road to Phelan Farm. Like, what was that path that literally you're devoting, you know, your life to it? I mean, there had maybe meeting Greg Phelan or COVID. I mean, yeah, you know, why are you doing? I need some stops along the way, which set
it
up.
Yeah, it's the journey started when Greg Phelan came to us and offered us grapes, because in 2016, and Sashi and myself, we bought some of the grapes for Sandy, and then we kind of kept that going for Sandy, and then eventually, and I asked him if I can graft some different grapes, and he said, yeah, sure. So we started to graft different varietals, the ones I loved, but quietly doing it without, there was not, you know, something we were talking about. And then 2020 came around, and
pre-COVID, like before that March or after?
Well, it was like, you know, no, it was definitely deep in COVID. And there was, you know, everyone probably had a moment of like reflection on what, you know, what will the world look like? Because, you know, no one knew if I'll be out for 6 months, for 2 years, 5 years, our rest of our life. We had no idea. It was a vacuum. So at that point, I decided to kind of, change my trajectory of my life and give farming a shot, because I've never farmed a vineyard before. And so I spoke to Sashi and kind of like decided, like, you know, I'm going to live in Cambria and kind of, you know, lead a different life and still be involved in Sandhi and Dhammadalakot and Evening Land and still do as much as I can. But, you know, my day-to-day life would be in Cambria. And so then we worked towards that goal and kind of hired a team of, you know, people who kind of do things that I used to do and kind of, you know, and I wanted to kind of full-time just, you know, work in the vines and then, you know, of course I have no knowledge about the farming. So it was a really wonderful winter of 2020. I'll never forget. I moved to Cambria and rented this big house with a friend of a friend's house. And I just kind of spent most of my time reading and just studying and very quiet. And it was for many, many months.
It's
just
a quiet town.
Yeah, quiet town. And just reading about, you know, farming and listening to a lot of podcasts and talking to people and getting ideas of what and how, you know, I would farm these vines because I've never farmed many. So it was just like, you just, you know, so I started with, in the winter of 20, we first, you know, got chickens and then first we got sheep, then we got dogs, then we got chickens. Then I learned how to kind of move them, graze through the vineyards. And all these things were like, you know, slowly I've learned how to manage the animals. And then you learn pruning. You learn, what you're going to spray in the vines. And a lot of the things we do is very experimental and kind of not in any book or not really,
So you've tried things that you didn't necessarily read about somebody using as an application?
Yeah.
You decided to get Pacific Coast water,
yeah,
something that's growing on the property, mix it up and spray it.
I mean, one of the examples is something we've done now. It's the third year doing it this year. I'm from India, and you know, I read about Ayurvedic applications, and so we take turmeric grown locally in around not far from Cambria, and we ferment that with ocean water. And then we kind of mix it up with some honey and use that as a kind of feed the microbes. And then we kind of, in the end, kind of, you know, mix
it. So that's more to feed the microbes
So we brew it.
Right.
So it's kind of and that's the first spray after the pruning, you know. So that's like before bud breaks. So it's just kind of an antiseptic spray on. And that's something... You know, we've used neem oil with that also. So, you know, that's something we've kind of came up with ourselves. And we do a lot of kind of, these little experimental mixes and, you know, things that kind of...
Have you ever done something where you sprayed it and the next day everything was dead?
No.
No, I mean, you're too smart for that.
No, not dead. But we once did a spray. I forgot what exactly... And it definitely, we might have sprayed it too late in the day. And
right.
So some of the leaves definitely got burnt. So, you know, things
you
learn, like, you know, just, you know, because we have this Italian Italian sprayer, which kind of breaks all the time. So it kind of gets slow sometimes.
That's funny. Right. You're hitting one spot a little hard. Right?
Yeah, but we, you know, it's like, you know, we use a Kubota. We don't use tractors in the vineyard. So, you know, this Italian machine is special.
So, you know, you alluded to a couple things that, you know, we'll maybe get to towards the end. You know, you and Sashi Mormon, who's a friend and partner, own and oversee two magnificent wine companies. Like you said, Sandhi and Domaine de la Cote. You made the decision and understood what you were doing. Like, you knew you were going to be somewhat reclusive, kind of singularly focused. I mean, what was going on in your life? You've been there, done it type thing? Or I wouldn't say drastic because it's great, but it's a fairly, you know, interesting move.
Yeah, I was like really tired of just being on a plane all the time and tired of just all the travel and eating,
caught up,
and drinking, and
caught up.
Just yeah. So it was, you know, it was a lot, and it was fun, but it was a lot. So, and you know, you, also, when the pandemic was, in the deep, dark days of the pandemic, you're looking inside and say, what have you done to contribute for the pandemic? Right. And I was like, I flew so much. It was crazy.
I know.
I mean, you just look at, your carbon footprint of, it's just lost. So then what do you give back in a very small way? I'm like, yeah, if I like to stay in one place and find a purpose to kind of do something meaningful for me, for the environment, and you can never turn back the clock and unring the bell, but you can try to improve somewhat.
Right. I mean, that people are flitting around and flying and, but yeah, I mean, you've kind of reversed that in a way. I want you to tell us a little more, about Phelan Farm. It sounds ideal for what you want to do. Is it ideal, or it kind of came to you and it looked pretty good and you were able, to mold it? I mean, and, the other question is, why is Phelan in Cambria so ideal?
Yeah, I mean, in California, it's hard to, to rent small pieces of land and vineyards. And here we are, the Phelan Farm, the family moved there in, 1850s. And it was a ranch. And then they planted the vineyards in 2007. So
2007?
Yeah.
So it was basically a farmland thing. No wine up until
less than
a couple of decades
ago. Yeah, it was just cattle. So now they still have cattle, and then they have avocados, and we have vineyards. I planted a small apple orchard, and hopefully we can start growing some vegetables a little bit.
So explain something to me. I was fortunate enough to meet you out there, and it's a slice of land, with some diversity, again, which we'll talk about. But the property beyond your 11, 12, acres just goes on?
Yeah, 1,100 acres.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1,100 acres.
So when I was there looking around, everything around was pretty much theirs, except to maybe one side or something.
Yeah, everything on the east side, driving up the canyon, it was all the family's property, and that's where the cattle graze. And
so there were no treatments and a lot of natural
fertilizer. Yeah, totally. And we use the cow manure for our compost, and so it's a zero waste environment. So all the pumice from the vintage, and then the vine cuttings, plus any trees and shrubs that have been broken down during the storms, we use all of that for our compost with the dried manure of the cows on the property. So it's that we keep everything quite internal.
Describe it to me. It's not like a box canyon, but it sort of is.
Yeah,
right?
It's a canyon. It's a canyon. It's like, it's a thin canyon which runs alongside a creek.
Steiner Creek.
Yeah, Steiner Creek.
Which most times is a beautiful thing, but lately it's been a pain in the ass. Right?
Flooding. With the rain we've had this year, it's definitely causing some trouble to the road, because you know, a real road is just, run a bulldozer and keep the road flat. But the road and the fencing has definitely been tested this year. But it's a canyon with four different parcels. And the soils are quite different in the four parcels, so we kind of keep them. And, we have different varieties planted on the four parcels.
And what about, climate and weather? I mean, does it play to what you love to do, which is cooler climate? I mean, was that built in? Is that one of the attractions there? Or you liked it anyway?
It's definitely very unusual climate, because we pick most of the varieties in October and we barely get it 12% alcohol. It's a very, we have Varazian usually in September.
That's late, right?
Yeah, late.
Super late.
Yeah, so we have Yeah, and it's a lot of the mildew pressure is pretty high, and it's quite moist and foggy there. This year we've had, I don't know, probably had like 60 inches of rain already.
Wow, but that's unusual.
Right? Unusual, yeah. Last year was 20, but apparently the old timers were like, that was normal. It's definitely, and in the summer months, you barely get any days above 75. It definitely
that is. Location, just yeah. the yeah. But that works well for you. So you're kind of living a big dream. What's ironic to me is, and again, I've been there, so I've kind of seen it. You're living this big dream with a small crew. I thought you had two people working for you. It's Abad, I'm guessing, right? Who's your fellow farmer, and everyone else could come in. How do you run the vineyard? During the course of most of the year, you guys can do the basic stuff. You bring people in to prune, obviously, to harvest.
Yeah, so pruning is done mostly by friends.
Okay.
Abe Schoner, and
an old friend.
And he brings a friend, Kaylee, and then friends come and help us, and we have a crew, and we can kind of do that over 3-4 weeks,
The pruning for the 11 acres or so
is
a 3-4 week project to go vine to vine.
Yeah, okay. And we can get that done. And then, when we start our sprays, will be middle of March soil sprays, and then the foliar sprays will start. And then, after that, it's just, it gets really kind of intense when you shoot thinning, and then when you're just keeping the canopy in check, just leaf pulling or.
There's always something.
Yeah, we get crews in sometimes, maybe twice a year to help us if we get behind, So if some friends come and they want to come hang out, I'm like, yeah, you want to come work in the vineyard one day with me and get a couple hours of work out of them, so.
Right. and you do the same for harvesting, I would guess. You'd bring
friends in. Yeah, we harvest a lot ourselves and a lot with the crews, depending on.
Do you have to go to outside crews, or you can get enough friends and stuff to pick?
Yeah, sometimes friends. Sometimes we can get some guys from Paso to come help us. It just depends. But this year, I'm hiring one more person.
What? Another farmer?
Yeah. One more person in the vineyard. On a set of eyes,
Right. That'll be, hopefully that'll help you too. Does everyone harvest, like you were talking about Verizon late harvesting, is that the area, or that's literally your situation because how you're set up?
I think it's the area and the varietals we have, but it's definitely everything is quite late in Cambria compared to other places I know.
All right, so now I want to get into some specifics and all that. I want to further discuss your farming and your winemaking, because now you're able to apply what you want to apply, grow what you want to grow. It kind of all comes together. So let's start with farming, which really is always been the focus of what makes a good wine. For some silly reason, it took podcasts or other people to say, if the grapes aren't made well in the vineyard, it's not, everybody kind of knows that now. It's BS. So you've created, and my words may be right, you've created like this ecosystem. It involves permaculture, organics, biodynamics. It's fair to pinpoint regenerative farming and all of that. Tell me about that. You were ready to go in and do that. But you said you were flying so much, big carbon footprint. How do I pull it back? By thoughtfully farming. But you've set up, you got sheep running around.
We kind of, after when I went in 2020, the winter, when I just was alone and just reading books and trying to kind of figure out what I want to do. I had read many books on biodynamics and sort of podcasts on regenerative and kind of created my own kind of idea. I don't per se say I follow one specific principle or idea, but I kind of do a collaborative. It's definitely, the basis is definitely regenerative. So it's, the vineyards have never been tilled, have never been plowed.
So talk about that for a minute. Tilled and plowed, you know, if people can't imagine, is a machine or even people and a horse breaking up the land between and around the vineyards. You don't do that. Why? That's a regenerative practice, right?
Yeah, it's a regenerative practice to keep, or, you know, mostly to keep all the fungal matter, all the vine connection all under the ground and not disturbing that, sequestering the carbon we've collected and had and what's been building up below the surface. So we don't allow that to, you know, we have a different kind of nutrient breakdown happening below the soil. Once you rip it, the vines, of course, get the energy very quickly if you do rip it, but then you do lose that and it takes years to kind of build that back. So that's one of the principles of regenerative farming. And then the animals, which we incorporated sheep live with us the whole year. I mean, there's some people either have sheep themselves or some people rent sheep for mob grazing. We kind of have them
a year round smaller crew.
Yeah, smaller crew, and then we gotta have electric fencing. We move them by watching, because different years have different growth of how much of the cover crops growing. So, and then the goal is that by the end of the season, they would have kind of gone through every parcel and every piece of the parcel and eaten enough. So we still, it's not completely eaten, but they also give us back, you know, all what they graze back in manure, which is helpful for the soil. So, and we do a lot of composting. We either put compost extracts in the soil, compost after the harvest in the fall, and really kind of try to build up that fungal matter to have a kind of a healthy soil for vines, because different agricultural products will have different fungal bacteria breakdown. We need to be at minimum 2-to-1 ratio from fungal to bacteria, minimum, and get to, you know, hopefully get to 5-to-1, and then those healthy soils will then kind of prevent the vines from really any diseases. You know, we kind of follow the idea what, you know, Dr. Elaine Ingham has been preaching, and kind of, you know, instead of, you know, killing the disease coming to your vines or to any agricultural
proactive, not reactive.
Exactly. Try to kind of make the soils healthier, so then the soils can really, you know, prevent that from happening to the vines.
Tell me one thing I don't understand. Re-explain it to me. Obviously, everything underneath is important. So you feed it above and it leads, you know, manure and treatments and what you don't put in and all of that. I didn't get the part when you break up the land, if you in fact till.
Yeah.
What happens to the vines? They're taking more energy out of
the... So when you have... So basically the nutrients that are in reserve under the ground, when you break the soil, you are, of course, releasing that. The vines are really happy to get it, but then it's a very short time. They get everything, and then the soil again becomes compact, and it, like, again, you know, it'll solidify, and also in the same process, you've lost the carbon you sequestered for the whole year.
Right.
But then the third thing is that you've also broken the network. All the microorganisms, all the fungal network you have under the ground is disturbed. So, you know, you've changed your little ecosystem very quickly by just one. And you know, this is an argument you can have forever, and there are pros and cons to doing this. But for the long run of the planet, you know, that is one of the most important things you don't want to disturb, is what's happening. I'm not sure if you've seen the movie or... on mushrooms and, you know, how they are no. the most, how they are the most important, you know.
Yeah.
Paul Stamets is like the, you know, he's been talking about it for a long, long time of how important these mycorrhizae fungi,
sure.
you know, how they work under the ground, because we only see what's happening above the ground.
Right.
And we don't see what's happening under the ground, because before a vineyard was a vineyard, they were grown wild. And when they grow wild, you know, they need the help of the trees around them and whatever's happening around them. So for me, right. one of the main interactions was in Field and Farm was to see this connection between these forests we have around the vineyards and their influence on the wine. So when you have the wine, you feel that kind of
energy, the participation yeah, of them being there.
Exactly. And you get that kind of herbal tone. You get that, you know, it's not just full of fruit and it's, you know, you get those kind of
well, it's the things. Old Heights eucalyptus
yeah.
story. You know, yeah, the yeah. vineyards are by eucalyptus trees and you right, taste right. it in the wine.
Yeah,
right?
So here you get, you know, you get some of that because that foresty kind of.
So, I mean, everyone should be doing it. Virtually no one is, you know, not just thoughtful farming, but regenerative. As far as what would kind of push people away, does it cost more money to do it? Does it require more of your manpower? Is it harder? I mean, is it all those things that you commit to, or it's not even that big of a deal?
I think it is a big deal in the beginning, because
to get it going.
To get going, to say you're not going to do things that are a natural process for 99.9% of the agriculture on the planet.
Right.
And you do, okay, I will do it this way. You know, your yields are could be really rough for that. We had very low yields last year, you know. So, you know, if someone takes on this...
Situationally, that's not going to be the circumstance going forward. It could be, but...
You know, yeah.
You didn't kill your yields because of that.
Yeah.
They may be less, but that's the consequence.
Yeah, also it was a dry year, okay. and we had a lot of right. kind of things that happened.
You got hit hard then.
And came together and created that. But I know for the long run, it's going to be the best for the place. And... It's something very important globally, because I think that we should and we will see more labels with regenerative farming on them, because I think that's the way you kind of, you know that it's, of course, it's organic, but then you're taking it a step up, you know.
I was going to ask you that. So it would be nice to read a label and the wine, the farmer's regenerative.
Also food. I mean, I've seen milk. I've seen meat products.
Me too.
And now,
me too, even in a restaurant, when they source their, you know, from the regenerative farm of the Jones family, or
yeah,
something
yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
No, I think you know, it's just that, you know, it's, you know, I think that the term is being used a lot now, but you really have to put in the work. And as I said, it, you know, it's not more expensive, right? It's not more expensive because
so cost is not an issue.
The cost is not what the
it's real, commitment.
It's the commitment of knowing that. You know, your yield could suffer for 3 to 10 years. It just depends. You know, it depends on the situation. Every like I was
but it's
lucky.
It's definitely that kind of transition.
Yeah,
you're
yeah,
definitely yeah. gonna feel it.
You feel it.
A little hurt.
If you convert, so for example, luckily Field and Farm had never been tilled since 07. So I have an advantage here.
Head start.
But if it was, then you would have to. You'll feel the pain. It's like telling someone I'm a bodybuilder and I'm eating all those hormones.
Right.
And now I'm just going to give you a vegan diet. But you still have to be a bodybuilder. You still have to keep your muscles.
Right.
It just gets hard.
Did you know, like, when you were working with Phelan not that long ago, I mean, you knew to farm regeneratively that they had until that you had a head start, or you stumble on that? I'm just curious about these little things, because they're so important. I mean, that sounds like a break.
No, it wasn't. When I knew they had until, that wasn't obvious. Of course, you know, I mean, I talked to Jason Jardine at Hansel, who was an amazing farmer. He was the first person who kind of told me about this path. And of course, Mimi Castile, who is, you know, I mean, she is like, she should be like the president of America to kind of save us from ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, you know, so you see people who've done this. It's not, you know, you see Nate, what's Nate doing at Hayu, and, you know, Dan Rinke, who's in Oregon also, and art and sciences. So, you know, there are people who talk about this and who kind of like, you know, of course, then you have Tablas Creek, right, our neighbors. I mean, they are
been biodynamic.
Oh, but they are regenerative. They're certified. I mean, what they do
and
is—
And at a fairly large scale.
Oh, my God. It's,
yeah.
If I have a question, I
call either Jason.
Jason or, you know, Jordan.
Right.
The viticulture, and no, it's just all these people have done this, and we are doing it on a very small scale and with no resources. It's just me, and now hopefully I have Daniel starting to work with me. So, you know, it's just like you scratch the surface, and you try to use your resources because we don't have any. But now, when you have resources, you can really kind of make a difference.
But that community is willing to share too,
100%.
Like embrace and take in, and show you everything.
Yeah, if there's a question, you know, I spoke to Mimi the other day. I was like, you know, because it was last year was rough. Just get through the whole year. You know, you farm all year, and then you see you have no yield. You're like, oh, you know,
right.
it's depressing.
Very depressing. You know. It's the old look in the sky. What am I doing? Move. You know, it's like, is this right or whatever? So she talks you off the ledge.
Yeah, and what I did this winter, I was just making sure I'm doing the right thing because, you know, it's like, you know, you have another shot because if this happens again, you know, it really kind of punctures your whole idea of like, oh, I moved here, did this, and here, this is, you know, so it definitely is.
You're tougher than that.
Yeah, when you have to ask people who've done it before you and who kind of know these things, I'm kind of living by trial, so I'm not experienced in all these things.
Do you ever think when is the trial period going to end, or you know you're getting there? I know it's an ongoing thing, but do you feel inwardly like we're close?
All I can do is do my best, right?
Right.
And then Mother Nature has to respond to that,
right?
And it's the dance we have, you know, and also the vineyards at Phelan are not like most of the vineyards because there's no neighbors. There's no one around us. There's not like, you know, you can see a vineyard. You can't see a house. You can't see a person. There's no phone service. There's no internet. You're just there. You're out there. So, you know, it's a lot. You have to listen to nature and say, oh, yeah. Because we are, in a way, mimicking nature. But when we do incorporate animals and we don't do, because I mean, think of a forest. Can you imagine if there's all these trees in the forest? Has anyone tilled a forest before? Yeah, because what
or
falls
rake leaves
down.
Or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. You know, so it's like, so you're mimicking it, and yeah, if a sheep comes and eats like this year, a bunch of all our shoots from the Mencia all got eaten by the sheep and the goats, and we lost like you know the whole part. But it's like, what are you gonna do? Hey, this would happen if you were in a forest.
Right,
an animal will come and would eat whatever the shoots are, and then you live with spur pruning. So
that's
like
the cycle, the natural
cycle.
Yeah.
So it's so you know you can get upset, but you do look inward and say, I hope.
But I have a question to that. Were the sheep mistakenly let to roam where they ate the shoots? I mean, it sounds like somebody opened the gate or something.
No. What happened was we Mencia was the last thing we picked, and I think that what happened was. When the sheep went in, they were supposed to go to the Chardonnay, the other side. But then they kind of made their way down to the Mencia. And the Mencia, the grapes had just been picked and they would still have, you know, green shoots.
Right, which and they is ate, appealing to them.
And they ate all the green shoots. So
that's cool.
We were like, we're happy if they eat the leaves. They ate the leaves and the shoots.
Right. I remember when I was there, you would take cuttings and put them down in a pile and all the sheep would come by. It was like a treat for them. Raj, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to move towards varietals because that's maybe the next interesting thing and, you know, a passion of yours. So I want to talk about that and, you know, I want to talk about, you know, winemaking. How you're doing that. So we're talking to Raj Parr. Raj Parr is the proprietor of Phelan Farm, among other things. You're listening to The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Raj Parr. Raj Parr of Phelan Farm in Cambria, California. Cambria is like 3 hours north of Santa Barbara.
Yeah, 2 hours north of Santa Barbara, yeah.
And how far from like San Luis Obispo and all that?
Yeah,
like 45 minutes?
30 minutes from San Luis Obispo.
It's a wonderful area. But like you said before, it's there are parts that are, you know, very isolated. All right, so let's talk about the varietals. You know, to make wine, you have to grow grapes. To grow grapes healthy, you have to farm. We talked about that. But you had a vision or you have a love or a passion for certain varietals, and you've translated that to Phelan Farm. I mean, I'm counting nearly a dozen varietals or something, and you know, some names. So tell me about the varietals you chose. There's some overlap, there's some blending to grow, and why. You tipped us off Jura,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I love the Jura region, and you know, it's a kind of a wild place with lots of trees and forests and that kind of stuff. So we planted, grafted actually, over Ondre Pinot Noir, we grafted Pulsard and Trousseau and Sauvignon. And then we have some Savoie varieties like Mondeuse and Jacquère, Granger, Altesse. we have Gamay, Pinot, and Chardonnay, and a little pink Chardonnay mutation of Chardonnay. And then we have one little section of Mencia from a little bit of Sacra. And then we have some few vines of Palomino, Mission, and Garnacha Tintorera, Alicante Boucher. So we have, that's like becomes one kind of one wine, like kind of blend. A field blend.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much.
So these. These are the grapes you've always admired. We all love Burgundy, and you know we love a good Burgundy or whatever. But these are more interesting to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love Pinot and Chardonnay. And we have some of that, but
you've been doing that for years.
Yeah, but so you know, and I love drinking Trousseau and Pulsard and Sauvignon, and just kind of a few things I love, and it's all you know.
How does it match? How does it match to soil, climate? You know, you can't plant anything anywhere.
Right.
You knew you could succeed with these varietals?
Yeah, so, you know, we did some soil studies and we had Brenna Quigley come and kind of check out the...
Rock star.
Yeah, the rock star, exactly. Right. And we kind of made some educated guesses. You know, I'm not saying that I kind of, you know, the heaviest clay, where the clay was... You know, the highest organic matter, that's where the Sauvignon and the Pulsard went. The vineyard, which had the quartz, that's where the, you know, pink Chardonnay, Chardonnay, Trousseau, Mencia went. The sunniest part of the vineyard, with the kind of the more of the loamy soil, that's where we planted the Mondeuse, the Jacquère, Altesse, and Granger. And then the most vigorous site, that's where the Gamay is. Along with some Pinot Noir.
Why vigorous? Or why because, does Gamay have to be in a vigorous site?
Because you can get a good yield. And,
okay.
And the plants can kind of handle the quantity of grapes we want. Because, you know, you could make a low-yielding Gamay, but then it becomes very serious and dense. And we had that in 21, but you know, you want to make something more kind of easy drinking and low tannin, so something fresher.
You have to explain something to me. The vineyard was there. Am I correct in assuming the majority of the vines were Pinot and Chard?
Yeah, mostly it was 2 acres of Chardonnay and then 9.2 acres of Pinot Noir.
So everything we discussed, you grafted?
Yeah, I've saved the Chardonnay, a 2 acre
right.
Chardonnay.
I didn't get rid of it.
And I saved some of the 2 acres of Pinot. The rest of everything right. was grafted, yeah.
But before you grafted what, where, you did the soil surveys like you described to know this would best thrive?
Correct.
I mean, you knew what varietals, then you figured out, you know, where to plant them.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
And that has worked out. I mean, did you make the right call, per se?
Yes.
Mostly ever?
So far, yes. Educated guesses.
Okay. Well, you're a good educated guesser. You know, I'll give you that. Does that cover everything? You know, you talked about like literally a little Palomino and field blend.
Yeah,
I mean, is there
yeah,
anything else that you're dying to put down or whatever?
No, I think you know, I would like to get a little bit Sauvignon Rose. We have Sauvignon Vert, Sauvignon Jean. I would love to get Sauvignon Rose, so maybe next year or something. But nothing this year. Then I have a small apple. I planted 48 apple trees.
Do you blend or you make cider?
We haven't got a crop yet, but we are kind of maybe by next year we'll get a crop.
What will you
and
do with
I
it?
Will make a co-fermentation of apples.
Wine, grapes, and apple?
Exactly. Mm. I've been making that already. I've been buying some apples. But hopefully 24 we'll do it. From our own apples.
That property, besides the Phelan family, has a little history, right? I mean, the descendants of that area and that property kind of roamed it pretty freely.
Yeah. It was, you know, there's a lot of homes built in the 1800s in Cambria. There's a whole section, even on Main Street, where there's old houses from the 1800s. Yeah, it's
pretty cool. All right, let's shift over to winemaking. We pick the grapes, we pick the sites, taking care of the soil. You pruned, you're picking, now you're making wine. You have set yourself to a philosophy. Has it changed? Do you have to do different things at Phelan? I mean, this is a dumb word, but you were never an inorganic farmer.
Yeah.
You know, so nothing is new. But what... Is the philosophy the philosophy? Is it tweaked or more focused here?
It's the same. It's like, you know, what me and Sashi have done in the past. We kind of, you know, we both came from cooking backgrounds, so we have intuitive winemakers. We kind of taste and kind of make decisions. It's very simple, you know. I mean, like in 21, it was all whole cluster. 22 was so small, so we kind of destemmed it. So 23, I have no idea what I'm going to do. But it's the idea.
Should be vintage vibe.
It's very kind of hands-off. We kind of don't overthink anything. We don't, you know, in the vineyard, we don't spray any sulfur or copper or anything. And then in the cellar, we kind of same thing. We don't add any sulfur or anything to the grapes.
Naturally occurring sulfur.
Yeah, naturally.
Works well enough.
Yeah.
Now that you've shipped wines and laid them down, everything is okay?
Yeah, I think so. We've tasted wines in France and in the UK and in Sweden. So, you know, the wines.
Everything's good. Everyone says that goes back to the soil.
Yeah.
Partially, right?
Yeah, I guess, again, things like I can't answer them because I don't know for a fact how it all works. But so far with the, you know, we've had good pHs and the wines have been stable and we've left them that way. We don't, you know, I love natural wine, but I don't want the wines to, you know, be, you know, not correct. It means variety correct. And so... We try to kind of keep it in that way. So winemaking is very simple. It's nothing too complicated. It's just fermentation.
Tell me about Finished fermentation.
Yeah.
But is it predominantly whole bunch, whole cluster? Depending on
the vintage. And then one of the big things is that we don't move the wine too much. So once the wine is pressed, you know,
What do you press the wine in?
Now we have a pneumatic press, but okay. Before that we had a hand press. We have both. So once the wine goes in barrel, you know, we may or may not use a pump. That's because the wine is still sweet at the time. But when it becomes dry, we'd never use a pump after that.
Why? I mean, what does it do?
You know, to preserve the natural CO2 and not to kind of disturb the microbes.
It's the same thing. Disturbance.
It's the same thing when we make compost tea. You know, we can't pump the compost tea because it'll kill the microbes.
Right. The whole point of wine.
Yeah, so same thing in the wine. So we kind of rack the day before we bottle most of the wines. And we do it by gravity. It's bottled by hand with gravity.
No temperature controls.
We don't control temperature. You know, we have in the wine cellar, we have a AC unit that uses recycled air from outside.
Yeah, but that's so environmental. I'm talking about temperature control tanks and stuff.
No temperature control tanks.
What about the wood? Is it neutral? Is it a mixture of wood and steel? Or
yeah, most of the aging is done in barrels in either 228s or 500.
Is it a preference like or French 1200 or
it's a mix of French. We have Stockingers and Austrian, so we have different vessels we age it in, and of course the idea is to use only in older barrels, but when you buy a Stockinger 2000 liter oval, you have to buy it new. You can't buy it but the idea is not to have any wines that are have oaky flavors or and the wines are getting
but bottled. Are you stuck with that with the new Stockinger to some extent or
I love the big format, and then we can age the wine in there.
But I mean the newer oak, you have to manage that, right?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean,
when you have the barrels, you have to you make sure it's clean and steamed, and if it's empty,
best is
if it's full, then don't worry about it.
No fining, no filtration, right?
Correct. No fining, no filtration. I would add sulfur if need be.
When you say need be, what's an indication of why you would have to?
If the VA is really escalating, so we have to kind of, so in some, it's maybe in the last vintage, we've used it twice, for two wines.
That's not a lot.
And then otherwise, I'm not a hardcore dogma of no sulfur or anything.
Right.
But if the pH is low and wine tastes good.
Based on that, you're not using it much.
Yeah.
Conscious about bottles? You use normal bottles, lighter bottles?
The lightest bottle humanly possible.
You can't, okay. Yeah. From day one of failing, bottling?
Yeah, same bottles you use in 21 and in 22.
Is there any reason not to do that? I mean, is there a shipping reason or damage reason?
Big bottles look fancier, but heavy glasses.
But I mean, beyond aesthetics, it's a little more protective or...
I don't know. Light bottles also carry in cases, and also we used glass made from recycled glass, because if you don't use flint, if you a lot of natural wine are in flint, like see through glasses.
Oh right.
But those take 60% more energy to make because they come from fresh glass.
Yeah, I mean the issue and topic is, under more discussion than ever. So hopefully people are, even consumers, are pushing from there.
And we don't put any caps on them. We use wax on some of the wines, and that's the beeswax we have from our bees in Cambria.
So that's how you make the wine. We'll talk about how to get it and, maybe some specifics. We talked about the varietals, and those are all translated into specific wines. I don't think regret is the right word, but you go back in a couple of weeks, you may be standing in the rain in the middle of this farm. I mean, you're happier than ever.
Yeah. No, it's.
I mean, is this a stop or this is going to be your life?
Oh, this is life.
This is it, huh?
Yeah. Just just turned 50, you know, so this is definitely
this is where you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. You know, I'm very happy for you for that, and I'm very happy that you're taking all your energy and expertise and continuing to make wine. All right, so I said we'd talk a little about some other stuff. I don't know anybody who has so much stuff going on, and we talked about it off air, and there's a reason. A lot of it involves friends or projects that interest you and all of that. But let's talk about a couple things. There's something new on the table that you're involved with. It's called the Wave. Is it plural? The Waves?
Waves, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quickly tell me, you know, what that is and why it's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a online platform where you can buy, you know, honest wines, wines made with minimum intervention and, you know, more natural wines.
So it's a curation of what you guys think are the best things out there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's a subscription model. You can buy, you know, 2 bottles times 6 bottles, 12 bottles, or you can buy a la carte from the
shop. So that's the description, these curated natural wines. Leave it to the experts, and then you subscribe and you pick your bottle count, right?
Exactly. Or you can go in and you can, there's an a la carte section.
If
you
you're looking for, this is the last question I want to ask you, but help me answer it. I mean, it's not the first guy doing this. Why is this right or different? Because of the people?
I think all of us who are involved, you know, we really want to kind of talk about, you know, the wines that matter, the wines that are like pure, because there's a lot of wines out there which is, you know, completely conventionally produced, right, and
sort of says or it's perceived one way and it's really not.
Right. And this is what we stand for, and these are the pillars we have, and kind of, I think people are asking more questions about,
yes,
you know, how the food is grown and how the grapes are grown and how the wine is made. And I think it's an important conversation. So here's an avenue you can, because I mean, there's many other platforms to buy wine, but, you know, like this. But really, this is kind of more geared towards the people who are more conscientious about
people that are conscientious driving it. You know,
yeah,
it's about all that.
Exactly.
Tell me about something that I recently noticed, hasn't been around, Par Collective.
Yeah. The Par Collective is a small community of like-minded people who I'm, you know, creating in a small 200 members. And because we make so many different wines.
So it's like a club or
membership. It's a small,
again, I hate to use the word like exclusive, but
it's a small wine club of sorts of the wines I'm currently making in Cambria, around Cambria. And so we just launched it. We're going to start with 200 members, and I'm going to make specific wines just for them, and that's going to be, and then
you do that? Didn't you have like the Raj Par Wine Club? I mean, do you still have that, or this replace? And I always saw it as you were able to release stuff that was, you know, you wouldn't do it at Domaine de la Côte or even.
No. We do that Raj Par Wine Club, which is kind of transitioning into the Sandi Wine Club.
Okay.
And then this is something I'm doing myself, and I mean
the
this
collective
is,
so is something.
Yeah, the Par Collective is basically what the difference here is, that these, I also want to create this network of these people who want to kind of follow my mind in a way, and
it's wine and community, not just selling wine.
Exactly. Be a part of the small community, and you know,
I don't think you'll have trouble attracting people.
No, but you know, we're going to start at 200, but then I really want to kind of create this website with a lot of information about the farming, about the top producers, you know, because like, instead of like, you know, I mean, everything, all the things I love in life, I want to put it down in this manner.
But in reading it, it's very interactive. All those 100%. Things where you'll do events and
100%.
You'll invite people and you'll make yourself accessible.
You know,
the community.
I mean, one of the things, you know, I miss the most outside of traveling, because I mean, I don't want to travel, but I do want to meet people and talk to people.
Right.
I don't think anybody knew what Zoom was 5 years ago, you know. No. So I still want to be connected with people, and people who want to be connected with me. It's not, I'm not forcing anyone to do it, but if someone does want to kind of, you know, follow the journey and kind of be a part of this experience. And
I think that's great. And it's brand new. Yeah. We'll tell everyone where to go. We talked about Sande and Domaine Delacote. You're still involved.
Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
I don't know if changing your role, but you're there and you're doing it the way you guys decided to do that. Still making wonderful wines. I think I just got my Domaine Delacote offering in the mail this week.
Yeah, that's right. It was.
All right, so there's that. Tell me, what's Bridge Wines? Is that a local winery that you're...
No, Bridge Wines is basically...
B-R-I-J.
Yeah, that's my father's name.
Okay.
So it's just the negociant arm of Phelan Farm.
Oh, okay.
So the wines we... The grapes we buy from friends and other people.
All right, let's talk about Scythians. You mentioned Abe.
Yeah.
You and Abe do stuff and wander around and do fun things, like take 100-year-old... vineyards in a parking lot in LA or something.
Yeah. No, it's a small kind of wine label that we focus on the wines from the Cucamonga area, because most people don't realize that the beginning of California wine, the center of California wine, was around Cucamonga and Los Angeles. They have wineries there and through the 1800s, and then with Pierce's disease and industrialization and
moved away,
everything kind of died. And now there's only like 600-700 acres of vines left. And we are, you know, honored to work with the Galliano family and have access to some grapes from their home vineyard and some other vineyards that they oversee and manage. And these vines are 100 plus years old, of Palomino and Zinfandel and Alicante.
But they needed some attention, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 100% needed, you know.
I mean,
they haven't moved. They've been there for a long, long time, and they've made wine there a long, long time. And I think that we are super excited to make wine from those vineyards and share with the world.
And you've made, what, a couple of years worth of wine? Or
yeah, just... two vintages I've made. Abe's made four vintages.
And everything is... fulfills your expectations.
Yeah,
always could be tweaked or whatever.
Yeah,
but
no,
you set out to do.
Yeah, it's above and beyond what we ever imagined, and you know, now we're going to work with Jose Pastor, who's going to, you know, it's his first California wine. He's going to be distributing in the U.S. I'm super excited about these wines.
Yeah, it's an interesting project. All right, just buzzing through a few other things. You make champagne with Marco Pelletier. You make Merlot with Marie Poncinet, right? I mean, these are, like you said, friends, things you like to do.
Yeah.
Not in it for the money, worth the time,
right? Yeah, no, Marco came to me and said, oh, we have this access to the vineyard in Le Menil. I'm like, yeah.
Manil is like,
yeah, so it was fun to start something small.
I tasted them yesterday.
Yeah,
I mean, they're tasting very well. What's Stolo? Is that a winery that you're helping in Cambria?
Yeah, exactly.
They do their own thing, but you come in and help them.
Yeah, so I make their wine and I make my wine.
I was going to ask you, I forgot to ask you, where you physically make Phelan. I know you make, you know, Lompoc.
It's Stolo in Cambria. It's the only winery in Cambria. And we make the wines. I make their wines and our wines, and they have a winery there and a tasting room and everything else.
So the obvious follow-up question would be, do you want to? Do you need to? Should you build a winery of your own somewhere?
Yeah, that would be a dream, but I don't think that's impossible in Cambria. Getting permits would be impossible.
So it's not even like... First thing is like money, or I don't want to bring part. It's like I can't even get through the permit. That's crazy. That's discouraging.
Yeah,
you don't even get the at bat with that nonsense, right?
Yeah, Jesus. It took them 7 years to get the permit. So,
and let's not forget, you love to cook. You were a restaurateur. You know, you helped Michael Mina. You have your hands in a couple of restaurants, right?
Yeah, no, I'm out of all restaurants.
Oh, you are?
Yes,
yeah, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Successfully escaped the restaurant world.
I don't regret that. I wish you were still there, but the way your life's going, you don't need that nonsense. All right. If we missed anything, there's always next time, Raj. But nobody leaves without doing the wine list. I told you you had to do this. Five questions. Everyone's been asked the same five questions. So it's not like, you know, the question du jour. The second show I ever did is the same questions. Here's the first question. Don't spend a lot of time on them because I got to get you out of here and I don't need long-winded answers anyway. What are you drinking now? What's in your fridge? Do the seasons change stuff? Are you curious about stuff? Are you drinking for the vineyard? Do you have to taste your own wines? Yeah. What are you drinking?
Well, right now it's been cold and wet. So for whites, we've been drinking Savoie whites.
Okay. You know, and, you love the Savoie too, yeah. We didn't mention.
You know, and then also like for reds, I've been drinking Nebbiolo. I've been drinking Mondos, kind of Syrah. So I think, you know, kind of winter reds, and yeah, it's been wonderful.
Okay, so that fits under your umbrella, consistent. This is the goofiest question on the list, but it's a good one for you because you're like a true foodie in every sense, preparation, knowledge, you know, all of that stuff, interest. Favorite wine and food pairing? Now, I've asked you this before, so it's the answer's on record. Could have changed, could be the same. I'll check it.
No. It's still, I mean, you know.
And it's not something you obviously eat every night, week.
Yeah,
know.
No, I mean.
What's the ooh-ah, Raj pairing? No, not the, what you think, what no, you
the,
love.
The it's always the same. It's like, you know, roast chicken and the Syrah, like Cornas or Coroti. That's like, you know, that's like. That's been kind of go-to for a long time.
Is St. Joseph too big for the chicken? Or?
No, St. Joseph would work. Or, all right. Know, Northern Rhone Syrah.
All right, so you like that chicken with the Northern Rhone.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, man.
No.
All right. We just talked about restaurants. Tell me about your favorite wine restaurants and or bars. And let me set that up for you a little. There's a ton. You've traveled. By mentioning stuff doesn't mean it's your ultimate favorite and you left a friend. Yeah. But just tell me people that you admire that have a great program, have a good vibe, they're knowledgeable. It's just a fun place to go into.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah. I mean,
anywhere, New York, you know, Cambridge, San Fran, whatever pops into your mind.
Yeah, but it has to be a wine restaurant.
No. Restaurant with great wine service or a wine bar.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, I'll tell you the great restaurant I went to a couple of days ago, which is one of my favorite restaurants anywhere now is called Safi's in Los Angeles.
I saw it just opened up.
It's just
less than a year.
Yeah, it's so great. It's the food.
They have a good wine program?
Yeah, they have a really
that's
good.
See, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, we had a nice Arinto from my friend Mike Roth from Lo-Fi Wines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, great seafood and vegetables.
I visited Mike when I visited you. We went to his barrel, you know.
Yeah. No, it's a terrific restaurant. It's hard to get into, but the food is just insane.
Give me something else like that. Any place in New York?
Oh, yeah. Last night we went to Sema.
Yes.
I mean, that's...
You don't have to prop them up. They're just one of the best restaurants in New York. But talk to me about the wine there.
Yeah, no, we drank champagne. We drank Chardonnay Taille and...
Goes well with that food.
Yeah.
What about by you?
I don't know, there's a burrito place, but they don't have wine.
No.
Zuni Cafe is the closest place, you know, up north.
That's a destination.
Before I got on a flight somewhere, like, you know.
But everyone knows Zuni. I mean, the story of Zuni has been documented by the New York Times like five times over, not that long ago. The wine program
is off,
whoever's curating it is, you know, still doing a good job. All right, those are good ones. All right, fourth question. Favorite all-time wine? Don't answer it yet. When I structured the question, my mindset was, what's the most expensive rare wine Raj ever tasted? Because you're an example of somebody who's been around that type of wine. I don't care about that anymore. The answer I'm looking for is, can you identify that wine that changed the way you thought about wine, that was a gateway, that influenced you, that inspired you? I can go on with the adjective.
Yeah. I mean,
important to you.
You know, it always comes back to like one person, you know, one wine. It's, you know, I go see Jean-Louis Chave, you know, almost every year. Uh-huh. And then, you know, and he's generous and, you know, he opened a bottle that we had together.
An older
Hermitage. 20 years ago, and he opened it like you know, and it was a white, you know, because no one pays respect to,
right.
Those to white Jim Tesh, because, you know. And,
yeah.
Yeah, so, you know.
Do you remember vintage?
Yeah, 62.
62 Hermitage Blanc?
Yeah.
Chave?
Yeah.
And what year was that?
Well, the first time I had it with him was in, like, 1999.
Okay.
And then I had it.
Was again. That a holy shit wine you tasted?
Yeah, like, but back then, out of context, you're young. It's like you're having it, like, yeah. This is, like,
yeah.
23, 24
that,
years
you know,
ago.
That,
and you have it now, you're like, oh, my God, this is, like, you know.
That all adds up. That makes sense. I didn't mention, but I post these answers online. People love to hear. Here's the final question, and you should be capable in answering this. I want you to recommend to me the best wines between 15, 20, 22 bucks. I want a red. I want a white. You can go category. Personally, I always say Muscadet, the right stuff, is a great value for the money. Where do you put me with that? And the redundant setup on that is my kids are in their mid-late 20s. They can't show up at a dinner party or give a gift of supermarket wine.
Yeah. No.
But they're not dropping 40 either.
I mean, you know, you have to, in that price point is difficult because it's just hard to get honest wines at this price. But there are some, you know, I mean, I think South America is a good example. You can,
Chile,
you know. Itata, there's a producer. Itata. The producer called Makato.
Spell.
M-A-C-A-T-H-O. They make pais and they make a kind of senso.
They make a 20-ish range.
Yeah, 20-ish. They make a Syrah.
A lot of those guys are organic.
Oh, yeah. No, this is like, yeah.
So Chile, those are the reds?
Yeah.
Chilean reds. I'll take that and run with it. What about white?
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, of course, everyone will say probably Muscadet. That would be like you can.
It's easy.
It's easy, you know, or a Riesling. I'll have to research of, you know, what I would drink at that
yeah,
price point.
There's,
you know, but
Riesling available at 20, but who knows? All right, so I'm going to go with those. All right, Raj, we wrap this show up with our final feature, the weekly wine sip. Every week we taste a different wine on air for the weekly wine sip. It's always great for a winemaker to bring their wines in. We discussed yesterday that you were going to bring in a Phelan Farm Pet Nat. I'm going to open it, and you're going to tell me right now a little about it.
Yeah, this is a pet nat of Gamay and Pinot Noir from Phelan Farm, and it was just disgorged. My friend Michael Cruz,
Michael was helping you with this?
Yeah, Michael made it.
He did?
Yeah.
Wow, no. that's a scoop.
No, because, you know, he's a good friend, and this is, you know, I grew the grapes, and he put it in bottles, so... And that's our collaboration.
So tell me the physicality of that. You grew the grapes. He comes down where? Did you make this in Stolo? Or?
No, he came to the vineyard, picked it up, took it back to Petaluma.
Okay. I got it.
And
so it's your grapes, his. So it's a Michael Cruz Phelan vineyard designate in a way, right?
Okay. It's Phelan Farm, and then
yeah.
And then he makes it, and
all right. So I was bending down like. Opening it, you said it's Gamay and
Pinot Noir, 50-50.
All right, so let's do the old evaluation. Let's give it a sniff, and we're going to throw it over the tongue and talk about it. So color, it's this gorgeous salmon. I mean, it ain't pink, and it's not red. It's not orange. It's not a Kansas City Chief jersey. It's kind of this pinky salmon, right?
Yeah.
Where's that from? Is that...
It's just
the blend of the two grapes.
Yeah, whole just pressed together and.
All right, nose. I suck at descriptors. Tell me what you get.
No, it smells like beautiful little strawberries and cherries and
kind of red fruit.
Yeah, lemon candy, kind of that.
Mm. I could never, you know, you go lemon candy. Oh yeah, it's there. All right, so mouthfeel. Does Pet Nat have a traditional mouthfeel, like certain champagnes, the mousse is fine, some are middle.
Yeah, depends. This is a disgorged Pet Nat, so it's not really like most Pet Nats are not disgorged, but I wanted to have it clear and not waste any.
So to explain, Pet Nat's one time fermented. Disgorge this, which means what? You went in a second time?
Yeah, we don't just, you know, it was fermented in the bottle, the same bottle, and it's just disgorged. So it's, you know, it's take the sediment out and.
Do you go through the freezing process? Exactly. Popping it out, and put the cap back on
and top it, and voila.
If you didn't do that, you would have sediment and maybe less clarity. Would it affect the flavor?
It would kind of definitely mute the nose a little bit. I mean, it's not fine to filter it. It's just kind of disgorged. So,
all right. So, palate. Does the palate descriptors replicate the nose descriptors? And is there anything else?
No, I think so. I think it has the same.
You got that strawberry, a little cherry.
Yeah.
Do you have that citrusy lemon in there?
Yeah, definitely. On the finish, you got that kind of. Orange candy, lemon candy. It's awesome, man,
because the fruit is there and it's dry enough.
Oh, yeah, it's bone dry.
The bubbles are, like, perfect. You know, it's not blowing up in your mouth. It's no flat and all that. All right, so what's the perfect pair for this?
Oh, this, you know, little charcuterie on the beach or on the patio.
Is this a similar pairing to a champagne?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you do fried foods and popcorn and all that crazy stuff?
100%. Pizza sounds delicious. Pizza, Doritos.
Okay. All right. So we just tasted the 2022 Phelan Farm Pet Nat. That's the front label. It's a beautiful pink label with one of the drawings of the farm. It's 50% Gamay, 50% Pinot Noir. Made on the Slow Coast. And if you know sparkling wines from California, you know who Michael Cruz is. And Michael helped Raj make this. What's approximate retail on this?
This is $59.
Okay. Yeah. So this is more of a, I hate to say it, because I hate to say that champagne celebratory. But at that price point, because you can get Pinot for less, this is a celebratory Pet Nat.
Yeah.
This is a special occasion Pet Nat. You want to drink Pet Nat for less? There's other stuff. You want a ball? You drink this.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
All right. So you're happy. Is this your first Pet Nat?
From Phelan, yes.
Yeah. You're happy with the way it came out? Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, Raj, we got to wrap up. I got to do a quick wrap up. I want to get some info from you, and then you're on your way back to the farm. Standing in the middle of the farm with no one to talk to and wondering, as David Byrne said, how did I get here? All right. So if you have a question, suggestion, wine happening or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods. Leave a review if you like the podcast. Follow us on Instagram @SBenRuby, Twitter @BenRuby. A little confusing, but you can always get to us there by way of the hashtag The Grape Nation. We are on Facebook @TheGrapeNation. As I mentioned, we will post Raj's wine list answers, and I will give you the specific information on the weekly wine sip, the Pet Nat. It'll be on our social media sites. All right, so Raj, let's focus on Phelan first. If people want more information about the wines, what's the best website?
The website, phelanfarm.com.
And there's commerce there. You could buy stuff. I think you have 2023.
Yeah, we had just some of the 2021 and 2022s have just been released, I think, this week. So.
Okay. And can you can you get information on that site for Park Collective, or that's separate?
Park Collective is a separate website. So that'll be parkcollective.com.
And how do I hit that? www.parkcollective.com?
Yeah, exactly. You can get information right there. You can join right there.
Okay.
And then
Sandhi, Sandhi.
Yes.
You can go there. Sandhi. Domaine de la Cote. Yep. Domaine, D-E-L-A-C-O-T-E. Arguably some of the best Pinot, let alone California Pinot. I've been buying it for years and drinking it.
Thank you.
And then the other stuff we talked about, waves.
Yep.
.com.
Yeah.
Scythians.
The waves. .wine.
.wine. And Scythians.
That's going to be all in Phelan website.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that'll the come
Scythian
together.
Scythian bridge and all going
to
be.
And if people want to follow you, they go to Rajpar. At yeah. Rajpar for.
At Rajatpar.
R-A-J-A-T. R-A-J-A-T. At Rajatpar. At Instagram, is that where you do most of your
That's all.
Playing?
It's the only social media.
You're not putzing around with Twitter? Or...
No.
No. Okay, that's fine. That's where we all are. All right. I want to thank our guest, Rajpar, for taking the time of a busy schedule. Not when he's at Phelan, because he's just standing around looking up at the sky. But when he's traveling, he's got a very, very busy schedule. So I want to thank you for sitting down. I want to thank you. I want to remind people this is our 250th episode. So I'll always remember the 250 because I know that it's you. So thank you, Raj, for doing that. Continued success with everything. Thanks to our engineer, Armin, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Ben Ruby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation. The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.